Podtacular episode 361, Forgetacular, for April 14th, 2013. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And today we have a plethora of guests on to talk about a special topic regarding Halo 4 and some past Halo games, kind of recent in development of the Halo franchise. But we were going to be talking about Forge and everything Forge related, up from when we first got Forge back in Halo 3 to how Forge stands today. And with me today is three people that are pretty heavily active in the forging community. First one is, he's been on the show one time before, and he's a big, big name forger, and you know him as Pete the Duck.
Hey guys, I'm Pete the Duck.
Quack, quack.
Quack, quack.
Now we're talking.
Yes, now we're talking his language. Now I can ruffle his feathers a little bit.
I feel like we should all applaud.
Yeah, seriously.
One of the other voices that you just heard is Cruel Legacy.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on again.
Nah, no problem. It's a pleasure. We'd like to have our big time returning guest back on.
I just get promoted to big time?
Woo! I think you're big time.
Yeah.
Pete's big time.
Definitely.
Big time, high five.
Big time, yay! Next person down the line isn't quite as big time, I think. No offense, but he is heavily active in the Forging community from my discussions with him, and I actually met up with him at MLG Dallas last year, and he is the IGM.
Yeah, that's me at least.
So we have these three guys on here to talk about Forge and everything related to Forge, all the way back from its early stages in Halo 3 all the way up to how it is now with the recent release of Forge Island. I almost said Forge World, Forge Island. And there's some pretty interesting developments that have gone on through Halo 4, and we've seen some pretty cool stuff come out of Halo 4's Forge environment, but I think for everyone, we're still seeing the big Forge push really coming out of Halo Reach, and then from Halo 3, since it was the first one, we just saw this really imaginative, creative bunch of people just kind of spring out of the community, and it's just kind of one of those other avenues of creativity that people can really dive into and express their own ideas, and I think it's a really cool feature of Halo to have. So we're going to be talking about that all night tonight, probably about for an hour 15 minutes, however long we decide to ramble on. So, as customary with all new guests that we have, GM, since this is the first time you've been on the show, why don't you give us a little background of who you are, what you do in the Halo community, and how you got your start with involvement in Forge.
All right, cool. You'll have to deal with my mic in the meantime, but that's life.
Hey, we can deal with it.
All right.
Just hashtag deal with it.
That's right. Hashtag deal with it. I don't know. I started, like most people, I started Halo with Halo 1, LAN parties every Friday night, played all the way through, loved it. Took a break for college, came back, end of Halo 3, and all of a sudden there was this Forge, which was amazing. And I don't know, I started some forging in Halo 3, but really, I mean, we can all agree that Reach is when Forge became something else entirely. And during Reach, I met Pete. Do you know Resix333?
I do not. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's good. I ran to this guy who had made a map called Temple. It was a Tempest custom, and I played on Temple and was so blown away by the guy's just spatial reasoning and aesthetic sense. I sent him a message, and so he sent me a friend's request, and he was like, yeah, actually, I do a lot of map testing of my own, and I help some of the community cartographer guys with theirs, and he was like, why don't you stick around if you know what you're doing? So that's how I got into Forge, come where we are. What else would you like to know?
Is there a certain community that you hang out with in terms of forging communities? I know there's Forge Cafe, there's the Forge Epidemic, there's a couple other communities out there. Is there one that you really identify with or hang around?
No, not particularly. Mostly it's like Resix will just tell me, hey, I need you to hop in this map and tell me what's not working with it, and I'll come in. I almost consult for him, really, and it's just fun. he'll pop in and be like, okay, I can't seem to make this thing work so that this is not the absolute power position of the map. And I'm like, oh, it's this or that. And for the most part, I've just had fun helping him playtest, doing some community playdates with him. And that's how I ended up just kind of making my own maps and having fun. So, but no, I don't have a particular group that I'm just really active in.
Okay. Is there any kind of particular style of forging maps that you like? Do you like the symmetrical objective types? Do you like the kind of asymmetrical freeform slayer types? Or I guess kind of going back to the Reach, the fun minigame type stuff like Rev Ball or those kind of funky game types? Is there a certain kind of class of forge that you adhere to?
Yeah. When I'm making my own maps, I have a real love for doubles maps. Because since Halo 3, we've been playing doubles on 4v4 maps, which is ridiculous when you have Forge. So I love to see people create really competitive. I prefer asymmetrical, but I understand symmetrical for competitive reasons. But when people make a great map that plays through for a dubs, I'm just always, always impressed and enjoy it so much. Because it's a whole section of maps that we don't even make. The game developers don't provide them. We're always just playing 2v2s on big maps.
Okay. Very nice. I think that is a good enough intro so we can hop right into the meat of this discussion. So we had the recent release of Forge Island, but Forge did not start with Halo 4. Of course, we're going to harken back to the days of Halo 3 Forge, and the first real map that we got to really kind of have a playground for Forge testing, all that stuff, was Foundry. So I guess right now would be a good time to just kind of go over each person and see what your initial memories of forging on Foundry were. So, Pete, why don't we start with you? What's kind of the first thing that you really explored when you were forging for Halo 3? And if anything was from Foundry related, give us a little bit of rundown on that.
Oh, well, if you forged on Foundry, you probably remember that truck, that one truck object. Mm-hmm. And when I first started forging, everything was based on that dumb truck. I don't know. It was just a source of inspiration for some reason. But yeah, I fiddled around on Foundry. I've never been super competitive, so I always tried to do something that was a little more creative or a little more casual, I guess I should say. So I started with like SWAT and infection game types like that. So yeah, Foundry was cool. I was totally into it at the time. Just recently, this past week, I actually went back into Halo 3 and looked at some of my old maps, and it's amazing how far Forge has come from what it was in Halo 3, because if you tried to make something in Halo 3 right now, like people complain about the lack of precision editing in Halo 4, Halo 3's Forge sucks. Like, it was amazing at the time, but it has been improved so much that if you go and try and make something in Halo 3 in Forge, it's just an incredibly time-consuming and frustrating experience. But man, we loved it at the time, and we did, like the community as a whole, we did some amazing things with that tool when it first came out.
So, yeah, and we'll get into the whole Forge tricking stuff here in a little bit, with all the phasing and the time delayed spawns and all that good stuff. Nevin, what about you? What's kind of your first memories of forging on Halo 3?
My first memory of forging on Halo 3 was like starting off by play. I actually didn't even really experiment with Forge at all until a little later. What was the name of that DLC map that came out? It was sort of a
Sandbox.
Desert scene. Sandbox, yeah. So when Sandbox launched, I thought, okay, that's it. I've gone into Forge and just messed around with you know moving some boxes around, but let me try and actually build a map. And half an hour later, I completely gave up. I just thought, I just suck at this. I am completely useless at it. And I'd already seen, I mean, that late into the Halo 3's lifespan, I'd already seen the stuff that other forgers had come up with. And I was like, there's just no way I'm going to be able to do anything that doesn't look pathetic after seeing what these guys are doing, right? So I really didn't do anything as a forger in Halo 3. It was not until Reach where I actually sort of sucked it up and said, okay, let me try and learn how to do something here, something either useful or fun, or you know, just trying to get a little better at it. And so Halo 3, my Forge memories are more from just playing on other people's Forge maps and custom games and things like that, and having a lot of fun with that.
Very nice. Greg, what about you? What's your first experience for forging in Halo 3?
I think my first experience was Griffball. Can I go
okay.
there?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Griffball, amazing. Just give that a shout out, right?
a shout out to our friends over at Griffball Hub.
Yeah. Halo 3 was cool. Pete's absolutely right. That forge was so clunky, and you knew it. Like, even before we had the nicer forges that came with Reach and Halo 4, you're like, this is pretty clunky, you know? This is pretty imprecise. I'm just kind of throwing stuff all over.
Yeah.
No, the cool thing about that, though, is because it was so simplified for most of the people who were forging on it, I really learned map flow, I think, from Halo 3's forge. You're just working with simplicity. It's how do I create lanes? How do I create a bottleneck here, an open space there? You know, where's the power position? Where do I place power weapons? I think it was great for learning fundamentals. And then once you had those down, it was great to have Reach's forge that just opened up so many possibilities for gorgeous aesthetics, of course, but really for expanding what you could do with the space, how you could utilize it, the movement you could force players to take or encourage them to take. And of course, a lot of verticality, I think, came with Halo Reach's forge versus Foundry. Foundry seemed so flat. Every custom game that you picked up was like, okay, we're still kind of staying on the ground or on top of this crate, you know?
Yeah. But,
I think fundamentals were a huge thing that came with Halo 3. And so it's clunky, but it was invaluable.
All right.
I mean, something to keep in mind is that, like, Foundry came out, like, how long after Halo 3 launched? I mean, Bungie never really intended Forge to be what it has become. It was never really meant to be a level editor where you create something original. It was always supposed to be, like, move spawn points or weapon placements on map. It was kind of like for, like, matchmaking issues, you know, fixing exploits and things like that.
Yeah, so they wouldn't get stuck, you know, cursing themselves for putting that, you know, that sniper rifle in that one spot that was just impossible to dislodge someone from, and it would ruin the map for its entire existence in matchmaking, right?
Right. Yeah. The funny thing about that is I think the Vidoc where they talked about Forge is when, of course, Foundry wasn't out at the time, but I think they mentioned about really not really knowing what to expect with the community being able to have that ability to forge. And I think it just kind of blew up when Foundry got put in there.
Mm-hmm. And then people figured out how to do stuff like interlocking or whatever you want to call it, geo-merging or whatever.
Yeah, the phasing. Yep.
I mean, and then that became a feature in Halo Reach. It was awesome.
It did. Brent, do you have any first memories of forging, or did you really look into forging much in Halo 3?
When it was new, it seemed pretty novel at the time, and then I tried it, and I just wasn't good at it, so I just gave up.
I think a lot of people kind of ran into that similar situation.
I think that's fair, because it was really hard in Halo 3. I mean, it took a lot of skill and time and energy to make just a really simple map in Halo 3. It wasn't friendly.
No, it wasn't. So,
after I saw all the cool stuff everybody else was making, I'm like, I can never make something like this, so I just quit. And I realized if I'd actually taken time, I probably could have made some cool stuff. But I don't know. I was too busy playing the game at that point.
My first Forge map that I made was a somewhat bastardized attempt at remaking Chiron. So
many people have tried.
So I kind of went into, there's actually a graphic on the internet floating around that actually has the layout of all the rooms and how the teleporters connect. And I did a combination of teleporters and shield doors. And for the most part, it actually kind of reflected what Chiron was supposed to look like in terms of each room, but it was still kind of clunky. I haven't gone back and tried it in Reach or Halo 4 Forge yet, although with how many more resources that we have, I'd probably be able to do it, even though we're still kind of limited on teleporter resources. I hope they kind of up that in later versions of Forge down the road, but we'll see. So the first map I remember from Forge was actually the Bungie 500 map. Do you guys remember that one at all?
No.
No.
It was like the first real kind of racing one, and it had that that kind of inner ring that you drove around, and then there was the outer ring, and then there was the hill where you had the teleporters lined up so you couldn't walk through the hill without being teleported out, and then you would be boosted up to do another lap, and that was kind of like my big first Forge thing that I remember. Was there any kind of particular Forge maps that you guys just kind of fell in love with, whether it be Forge art or simply aesthetic or actual gameplay? Is there one that kind of sticks out in your guys' mind that's kind of iconic to Halo 3 Forge?
What I got started with in Halo 3 Forge was making obstacle courses, because I liked having something that when none of your friends are online, you can play. It's going to keep you entertained. And so that's what I was really interested in and what I've made a lot myself in Halo 3.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyone else? I didn't spend much. I mean, because Forge maps didn't really, I mean, they didn't make it into matchmaking anyway in Halo 3. So aside, I mean, I had a few custom game nights with friends, but I never got to play on enough Forge maps, you know, on a regular enough basis or often enough for any of them to really drill themselves into my memory. I remember more clearly watching videos of, you know, guys like Pete who were posting these really cool obstacle courses, or, you know, there were some people who would start to make sort of, you know, Rube Goldberg machines and things like that. But not a lot of actual gameplay on Forge for myself.
Does anyone remember the sumo map from Action Sack in Halo 3?
Yep.
See, now, to me, that is the epitome of Forge, just because I wasn't playing Halo anymore. That was the first time that between Forge and the game options, someone created another game for me anyway. And I was like, I'm driving other cars off. This is cool. You know, I had no idea that we could expand this first-person shooter to be something else entirely. And someone mentioned Race earlier, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, what was the sumo one? I think I recall the name, but I don't remember what it was off the top of my head.
No, I don't remember the name either. I thought it was just called Sumo or something similar to that.
All right. So let's talk about some of the features, or lack thereof, in Halo 3's Forge. So we had a basic kind of operation of Forge where you could place objects, place spawns, place teleporters, but you really couldn't do much past that.
You could also delete them.
Yes, you could also delete them as well. But it didn't take too long for people to figure this out, but whenever you were putting objects together, it was always a hard time actually trying to make them flat, make them actually fit together, be smooth, and all that nice stuff that we have now in Halo 4. And one of the big tricks that took some time to nail down and learn was the ability to basically phase objects. And how you kind of did that was you placed an object, you had a time delay on when it spawned, and then you would start a new round, place the other object, wait for it to spawn in, and if it worked, then you set the other one on delay, and you go back and forth. So that's just beginnings of how frustrating it was. What other kind of tools methods did you guys kind of employ when you were using Forge, and the little tricks that you had to learn? Because I can think of quite a few off the top of my head of Forge tricks that people ended up learning.
That whole merging thing that you're talking about, one thing to keep in mind is you had to start a new round. And how many times did you start so many rounds that the game actually ended and you hadn't saved? Because there's only like, I think it's like 32 or something rounds you can start before Forge would end a game in Halo 3.
If
you're merging all these blocks, it's easy to get up there and not realize it. And then if you don't save and the game ends and you just lost all your work and you have to start over, and that was bad. One thing I remember is there was no rotational snap. So if you wanted to rotate a wall like 45 degrees or even 90 degrees, something simple, you couldn't just do that by freehand because it would look awful. So you had to like put down a corner using other blocks, and then you would like smush your wall up against those blocks to try and like use them as a something to align that wall. And that was something I spent a lot of time doing because I don't like things being crooked.
Right. It takes a lot of time and effort. Another one was merging beneath floors. Did you ever do stuff like that, like merging into actual solid pieces of the map?
That was tricky. That was fun. I did that on Standoff. I blocked off the entrances to the bases, and in order to do that, I had to merge the blocks into the base. And it was very interesting when you're trying to get that to work properly. You had all kinds of blocks sitting there trying to align this one block that was like freaking out, glitching through the geometry of the map. Yeah. It was rough, but it was fun. It was a good time in Forge, I think.
It just goes to show with how much time and effort people had to put in the maps to make it a good map. It was definitely a very steep learning curve for Forge and Halo 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have all these features now that we kind of take for granted from the original Halo 3 Forge that no other game really has at the moment. At least from a first-person shooter perspective. There's level designers for other games that are out there, like Trials. That one's crazy.
Yeah, Far Cry has a pretty incredible level editor, too.
So
I haven't messed with Far Cry yet. I have it, but I haven't.
I haven't used it myself yet either, but I've been planning on diving in on that at some point.
Another thing is, too, just from terms of like palettes, there weren't many things that you could actually go out and really custom design your own map unless you were doing it on Foundry or Sandbox. And then with Sandbox, we actually had the three different kind of play spaces that we could use for different areas of Forge, and you could teleport between the spaces. I think one thing that a lot of people liked was the crypt for Griffball. They used that one quite a bit. And then the top area, just for kind of a flat surface where you could lay any blocks on. And there were, I guess Pete the Duck, you probably used that one quite a bit for all your trick jumps or kind of those kind of style maps, the puzzles, I would guess.
Yeah, my first obstacle course I built on Blackout, I think was the name of the map, the Lockout remake in Halo 3. Yeah. And in order to do that, I had to, you couldn't just make a block float. You had to build a structure to support it and then delete the structure and the block would just magically be there. And so the first, I think, two maps, the two obstacle courses I made on Blackout. And those were just so time-consuming. And then we had Sandbox with this sky bubble on this grid. You could just place an object there and it would just float. And I was in shock when I made my third obstacle course. I couldn't believe how fast it went, just having that sky bubble grid.
Wasn't there a way that you could just hold an item in the air while you had it held and then had someone else start a new round? Oh.
Maybe that. You could also save and quit. If you saved it while you're holding it, ended the game, and then went back into the game, it would be floating where it was. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's lots of funky little Forge tricks that came out from Halo 3 Forge.
Sounds like so much work.
Yeah. And then that's people in Halo 4, they're like, I don't have precision editing. I can't Forge anymore. Go back to Halo 3, man. See how good we have it now. That's what I have to say. I mean, yes, it'd be nice to have precision editing. I'm not going to say it's not you know, kind of. It kind of sucks a little bit not to have it, but compared to where we started, Forge is awesome.
Well, and the funny thing is, there were actually a good set of maps that came out of the Halo 3 Forge, and it just goes to show how dedicated some people were. And I actually think, and I think just from talking with other people, that the quality of maps that came out of Halo 3, the average was a lot better than it was in Halo Reach, just because there was that steep learning curve in order to actually be able to use Forge very, very well and know all those little tricks. And now with Forge a lot more available to everyone else, there's a lot more maps out there that might not be as high quality, but they're still, even with the new tool sets that are out there for Forge, the possibilities for making better maps just exist through those.
Yeah. I mean, Forge is easier to use now, so more people can use it. So I guess the average quality might go down a little bit, but it's better this way. It's much better.
Yeah, you get people. There are people getting into it who maybe, for whatever reason, just looked at Halo 3 and said, I either can't put in the time to do what I want to do, or the ideas that I have just don't seem to be possible. And now with Reach and then Halo 4, they can sort of just go nuts to a certain degree.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't want anyone out there to think that they shouldn't Forge because they can't make something awesome. I mean, the whole point is to have fun. Yeah. You know?
Right.
What Nevin was saying is really, really right on, because that's how I was in Halo 3. After I saw everybody doing the geo merging and whatnot, I was like, okay, I understand that that's amazing and cool, but I'm in college right now. I do not have the time to devote to geo merging, all right? So, you know, I just dropped off the Forging radar for a while and just played other people's maps. So I think time, we keep mentioning time, and that became such a big concern, I think, when making the next iteration of Forge.
Yeah. Speaking of next one, unless anyone else has anything to say about the Halo 3 Forge, I think we can move on.
Yeah, sure.
To Halo Reach. I mean, Halo 3's Forge was definitely a good platform. And then when, I guess, Bungie realized how much people were out there willing and ready to make their own kind of maps, that's when they kind of opened the floodgates for Halo Reach's Forge. And that's where we got a lot of the really, really cool tools to work with in terms of a world that was specifically made for Forge. We had Forge World. We had palettes that could actually, where you could construct your own map basically from scratch. Along with other precision editing, the phasing, float, all these other little tools that you could use throughout the forging process.
Mm-hmm. Rotation snap, and we had the coordinate editing.
Yes. Coordinates are the best thing in the Forge.
And make things so much easier. So I guess let's just kind of run down some of the big ticket items that Halo Reach's Forge brought into the play sphere for forging, and then we can I'll let you guys just talk about or comment on those. First thing was, I think this is big for everyone, is the ability to phase objects together, especially when you're trying to make like a flat surface.
Yeah, that was huge for me. Absolutely mm-hmm. huge.
Yeah.
As someone who, I mean, I got into forging and Reach originally to do racetracks. And I don't know, thinking about what I did, even with my, you know, in the big picture, my experience with making racetracks is limited compared to a lot of the other track builders out there. But all the best tracks I've seen have just phased pieces left, right, and center. And it really just let that community explode, I think. So,
yeah,
I don't think there's any way you can overstate the importance of being able to just phase things. I mean, if there was one thing that Bungie was really good at, it was, oh, what does our community want? Let's give it to them, you know, and to see people phasing things, you know, in Halo 3, going through that kind of time commitment we were talking about, and then to have them say, in the next iteration, we will completely eliminate the time commitment, we promise. You know, I remember watching like the Vidoc, and they're like, here, watch this. And they slip one piece through another. And I'm just like, I could stand up and applaud.
Yeah, really?
I'm so
yeah.
excited.
It's like, thank you.
Yes.
Well, not to jump backwards, but, you know, just briefly going back to what we were talking about with Bungie's initial idea for Forge Mode, I don't think it really... I mean, maybe it occurred to them to a certain degree that people would try to make levels for it, but I don't think that was ever really the point behind it. I mean, like we said, they'd initially just used it as a tool so they could go in and tweak weapon placement and spawning and maybe add a shield door or something like that to tweak the maps after release. And I remember listening to the Bungie podcast a bunch before Halo 3 shipped. When they first announced Forge, they were talking about it as sort of a fun multiplayer sandbox where people can jump in and play a match where not only are they running around shooting each other, but each team would have a monitor spawning stuff down for people to fight with, right? And, oh, my teammate over here needs a tank. Here's a tank. Or, you know, and they seem to have this completely wildly different vision of what Forge was going to be. And then they saw what the community did with it and they said, Oh, well, we can make this easier for you guys. And they went sideways with it in a way that was fantastic for the community.
Yeah, they realized how much of a crowdsourcing potential they had in their hands. It's like, this is a good business move, guys. People are going to make maps for us.
Yeah. I know. And that's something that I really believe in, is that Forge is one of the most important elements to the long-term lifespan of a Halo game. Because it's where a huge source of fresh content comes from. I mean, you get the DLC maps, but I mean, Forge is just, to me, it's better than DLC because it's free and there's like way more of it.
Well, and you have another avenue for people to express themselves and really release their creativity. And that goes against the whole fact that now the community is making maps and the game developers don't have to really focus on making new ones and keeping the experience fresh.
Yeah.
Now, kind of like what we saw with Reach, that can only go so far with a limited palette.
Yeah, at a point you get tired of seeing gray.
Yeah, there were enough gray maps. Oh my gosh, watching MLG for like Halo Reach was just watching like a gray screen over and over again.
Yeah, well, but that's a whole nother can of worms. MLG, I mean, You want to talk about people who took the idea of Forge and ran with it. They used one stock map? Is that all they used?
No, they used two, I think.
Almost everything was Forged for them.
They used Zealot and Countdown.
Yeah, Countdown. So two. Oh, two. You know, they just pushed away all these maps. I mean, how many millions of dollars do you suppose were spent designing these maps? And then your core competitive segment of your player base just shoves them aside and says, nope, we have this other thing now. We don't need you anymore.
Well, I'm not even competitive, and one of my favorite maps from Halo Reach is Caged, or Uncaged.
Oh, I love Uncaged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was pretty good once they added the extra ways up to the top.
Yeah.
Once they add those a few extra key things that kind of help map flow a little bit.
Well, and going back to your point about the color palette, I think, I absolutely would have loved a wider range of visual colors and textures to work with. I mean, there's no question that would have been nice. But it never really drove me crazy the way it did some others, because I think for myself, I'm not really into the competitive side of the game as much. I'm a competitive player in terms of, you know, I play to win. I love to play on an organized team. I try to improve all the time. But the typical quote unquote competitive MLG style of play and style of map design is not something I've ever really been into. And so for me, I mean, the maps in the MLG circuit were the MLG playlist was one of the big turnoffs. They're very boring to me just because it's not my style of Halo. And I love the natural terrain being mixed with these Forge constructed pieces. And when you're playing on maps that, sure, they've got some gray walls here and there, but a lot of what you're playing on is grassy hills and cliff edges and waterfall beside you on one side and the ocean out on the other side, that it doesn't get visually boring the same way, which is why I think the inclusion of Forge World with the Forge mode in Halo Reach was so brilliant, right? Because the Forge pieces may have been fairly limited in terms of their aesthetics, but the environment we had to work with was unbelievably varied. And I think that went a long way for me personally and my ability to enjoy Forge maps just as much as the shipping maps.
And I think one thing that kind of bothered me, I never really cared much about whether it was gray or not. That never really bothered me. But the issue I had is in some maps, it was hard to like make sense of the map because you couldn't really tell where a doorway was or something like that just because of, well, everything was gray. But comparing the palettes, like if you compare the launch palettes for Forge for Halo 4 and Halo Reach, I actually kind of prefer the simpler textures of Halo Reach.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think what Halo Reach would have benefited from is having the shadows that Halo 4's Forge has. And I think if we were playing on those gray Halo Reach maps, but we had dynamic shadows from the Forge objects, I think those maps would have looked a lot better. And I think you would have been able to understand them. Like you would be able to see a doorway because it was a different, you know, it was bright compared to the dark room or something like that. I think would have made a lot more sense visually. You would have been able to make sense of the map. And I think that would have solved a lot of that outcry of too much gray.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of things in Halo 4's Forge, even though people complain about it, that are other little gems to the Forge system. But backing up to Reach a little bit, we just talked about the ability to phase. The next big thing I think was the precision editing and coordinate system that made it a whole lot easier to really line up pieces and get them smooth for racetrack maps. If you're making floors or walls, make it to where those are smooth and you don't get stuck on them, because God knows how many times I get stuck on freaking corners and die. But that, I think that's the kind of other big ticket thing whenever you think of Halo Reach's Forge system, is the ability to have the precision editing and the coordinate system editing.
Absolutely. Yep. Very good stuff to have.
And I guess kind of closely tied to that is also the rotational snap.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, in Halo 3, it was so hard to get a flat wall or a flat floor or flat anything.
I think that was proven in when they tried to make the griff ball courts.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess from Greg's history, he can attest to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a big griff ball player. There was some frustration that happened. Yeah. Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
All right. There's nothing you want to talk about? No?
No, because no one wants to hear me whine and complain, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. I can't say something nice, right?
Yeah, right. So, let's see. What else was there for Reach?
Of course, behind all that precision editing and coordinate system, there was the rotational drift on objects like the Colosseum wall. That was in Halo 3, too. That's been in every iteration of Forge. Just, I guess it's how they save the map files. That stuff just drifts a little bit. It's 1 degree different. Yep,
definitely. That was so frustrating. If you were using a piece that's not really how it's meant to be used, but you put it on like a 27-degree angle and made a ramp with it, and then you go into the actual game and you find out the ramp has like a little lip at the top, and if you try to run down it, you get caught, and you're like, I hate my life right now. I took so long to line that thing up.
It seems pretty bad in Halo 4, actually. Because a friend of mine's
so much.
Been forging some stuff for something that was for a project, and I would join up one of his parties, and I would walk around, and it's like, dude, these aren't lined up whatsoever. And on his screen, they look perfectly lined up, but then when I look at them, and then we go into custom games, it's like, it's all messed up. Oh. So
if you hate someone, join them while they're forging. And if you have a host switch, you'll totally screw up their map. Everything will rotate a little bit.
Yeah, I was about to get in on that and say, don't ever join someone who's forging. Or if you're forging, close your session. Because, yeah, when somebody jumps in, everything goes to hell.
That just didn't make sense why that happens.
Some really weird stuff happens. If you're forging with a group, especially in Halo Reach, just objects just really behave weird.
Yeah. No kidding. Let's see. Also in Halo Reach's Forge, I'm just kind of thinking of the stuff off. I'm thinking of stuff off the top of my head. So if you guys have something too that I'm missing, definitely throw it in there. But the ability to teleport vehicles.
Yeah, I never really used it much, but it's nice to have, and I've used it in Halo 4 a lot.
Especially with the map that we've been playtesting or playing a lot, Onslaught.
Yeah,
I think everyone loves that one that we've played it so far with the custom knights.
Yeah, it's good to hear.
Yeah, I was going to really gush over that at some point. I mean, is now a good time to do that, or do we want to wait until we get a little more into Halo 4?
Gush. No, just gush if you feel the need.
Okay, so again, I'm jumping around here a little bit, but I was
this is Podtech that you're talking about. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. I was taking part in the Xbox Canada Halo Playdate last week, and I was in there with Green Skull and Minolta and a bunch of other guys from the Xbox Live community, and we did like nothing but custom games all night, and which was a lot of fun. It was a total blast, and it was, as we mentioned earlier, it was so much fun to play all these other games that weren't Halo, thanks to what the forgers and the forging community have come up with. And I loaded up Onslaught for a round, and it was just like nonstop cheers and laughter from the entire 16-player party for the entire game, and we finished it, and it was just like I could have done it 100 times over again. It was so much fun, and so like just so tight, so tightly designed, such a simple focus. Everybody always knew exactly what they were supposed to be doing. There was never that moment that always seems to happen in Halo where you're sitting around waiting for the vehicle you want to respawn or the weapon you want to respawn or whatever. Like you're just, it was nonstop play, nonstop movement, and it was a total, total blast. And I put my controller down at the end of the round, and I was like, this is more fun than anything I've played in Halo 4 matchmaking right here. Why is this not in matchmaking yet? It really needs to be, because it was just such an unbelievable fun game type. And I could go on and on. I mean, it's just such a testament to what guys like Pete here and everybody who works so hard in creating these fun Forge maps and custom games can do, and how it can break up the pace a little bit. I mean, I love regular shooty Halo, right? I mean, it's what attracted me to the game in the first place. But I think Halo 4 may be a little more than previous Halos. Part of the problem I seem to have with it is that no matter what map you're playing on, no matter what game type you're playing, it all ends up kind of feeling the same. It's about the same pace. The action is pretty much the same. You find yourself doing the same things over and over again. And something like Onslaught comes in, it's just such a breath of fresh air. And it didn't feel sloppy or half finished like some custom games easily can, you know? So it was, mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, well done, Pete. It was fantastic.
Thanks. I'm really glad to hear that. It's funny because I actually made the original Onslaught. I know Onslaught is the name of an MLG map, but I never heard of it until like 2 months ago. But the original Onslaught I made back in Halo 3, and it was my response to Infection, because when you're playing Infection, it sucks to be the infected. It's yep. boring, and you're always running and getting shot, and you can't kill anyone. So I made this game type. And the entire concept behind it was I want it to be fun to be infected. And so I gave the infected all these vehicles, and I gave the humans all these explosive weapons like rocket launchers and stuff like that. And it was fun in Halo 3, and I've been remaking it ever since. And it's changed a little bit. It was a little bit different in Halo Reach. It was a little bit different in Halo 4. But I just wanted it to be fun to be, you know, I just wanted it to be a fun game type, because I feel like Flood and Infection can be a little boring when you're the infected or you're the Flood or something like that. And you know, you don't want to be bored. You don't want to quit or set down your controller when you're the Flood. And I think in some games it's like that. It's like when you were playing Infection on Uncaged and all the people are like in the tower or something, it's like, why even bother? You're just gonna get shot. And yeah. So I made Onslaught. So okay,
let me ask you a question, Nevin. Do you mm-hmm. Like you said, you're gushing and you loved this game type, but do you think you'd have the same appreciation for it if it weren't for the backdrop of regular Halo gameplay?
It's hard to speculate one way or the other, because, you know, of course, when you play a certain type of game for the number of hours that I play Halo, anything that's different does sort of, it has that freshness to it. But you know, I think it stood out as being really, really strong to me, just because even though I was hit by, yes, this is fresh and different, and it's not the same old game of Halo over and over again, just going back and you know, I was working on a montage for with a collection of footage from this game night that I played, and so I've rewatched the film a few times, and going back and watching it, and just the really good nonstop pace and flow of the match really stuck with me. There's something about the way, first of all, as like to Pete's point, the way you feel, like if you spawn as a human, you're like, yes, I get to use the railgun, this is going to be awesome. Or if you spawn as a zombie, it's like, yes, I'm just as happy to be doing this. And that's something that I feel like a little too often in Halo, a respawn is so often followed by a disappointment, you know, like yeah. You spawn and you're like, oh, I'm close to the tank, and oh, my teammate just took off with it. Okay, well, maybe I'll go and try and take that high ground there. And, oh, well, no, there's three enemies camping up there, and none of my teammates are helping me. So I just got shot in the face and respawn. And, oh, there's the Mantis. I'm going to jump in. And now my teammate is betraying me because they wanted the Mantis. You know, it's – and yeah, there was none of that, like absolutely none of that in this. And I think part of that comes from the fact that it's just such a focused design. It's such a simple game type in a way, right? But the fact that it's just like, hey, let's just make everything that's in this game fun, right? There's no part of this game that sucks. It's just either you get to use awesome weapons or awesome vehicles, and whether you kill someone, it looks cool, or if you die, you die in this big explosion, so it looks cool. And it's something that has started to slip away from Halo a bit, and so I just really appreciated that a lot.
Okay, so let me expand the question for everybody. When you have, we've talked about how a lot of these Forge maps, you actually prefer them, you know, over the maps that ship with the game. Mm-hmm. A lot of these game types, you prefer them over the game types that ship with the game. So the question I have is, if at this point we prefer what the community is designing, why is the developer still wasting resources, like with a map pack that half of the people aren't going to buy because they'd rather play a community map anyway? Like, what's the future of that, of crowdsourcing this kind of thing?
I don't think it's necessarily something that you're more attracted to the custom games. I think it's that nice break from the norm. And because there's so many different opportunities, there's so many different forms of variants off of classic game types. And then there's the other game types that we kind of make up, like the bastardized attempt at recreating race in Halo 4, for example. I don't think it's the fact that the maps that come with the stock set are bad, or that the game types are bad. I think it's just we like the different set of options that are out there.
A lot of times, back before Halo 4 came out, and I was playing Halo Reach, what I would usually do if I was going to have a Halo night, I'd get with my buddies, and we would go into matchmaking. And, you know, after like 2 hours, we'd have an intermission, and we'd jump into a custom game party, and we'd play a couple of wacky things just kind of as a palate cleanser from, you know, playing Invasion and Team Slayer and stuff like that. And then we jump back into matchmaking. So I think there's definitely a place for those developer maps. And I think I'm sure there's people out there that have Halo 4 and they will never, ever play on a Forge map unless it's in matchmaking, because that's just their focus. They love Team Slayer, you know, the traditional experience. But I like having that balance, and I definitely like playing, you know, normal developer maps sometimes.
Well, I think part of the weakness that I've felt in the standard shipping maps lately is that it used to be, you know, like I said before, it used to be that, you know, in Halo 1, a game on Blood Gulch was a very different game of Halo than a game on some of the other smaller maps. Or in Halo 2, you know, a game on Zanzibar was a completely different game than the game on Waterworks. Like, there was just a different flow, a different pace, a different type of dynamic. The nature of the environment made you play very differently. And I don't find that exists in Halo 4. I mean, even the large maps that we have in Halo 4, the sight lines aren't really any longer than they are in the small maps. And there isn't a real defining iconic element of the layout that dictates how you play on that map. It's the same, you know, it's the same sort of level of just checking your sight lines and looking for cover that you use well in the small maps to the big maps. And there's these great visual elements like in the skyboxes that make one map strikingly unique from the next. But for me personally, when I'm in the zone of playing the game, all that stuff fades into the background and I don't notice that anymore. I miss things like the big giant windmill in Zanzibar that was not just a visual element, but it was actually a unique tactical element that you only had on that map, and you could do things in that map that you couldn't do in any other map in the game because of just the physical nature of this giant rotating wheel that you could smash into, right? And I think that's something that you see people bringing in with custom games and with Forge maps, where, you know, when I played Onslaught, that one game type, that one map is a completely unique experience from anything else. And you know, and then, you know, later on playing something like one of the other game types we were playing was Slender Man, which again is a whole different game, a whole other experience, a whole different flow and speed. And it's the only time I've ever played a game where you're literally like you're standing still for most of it and laughing the entire time, and on the tip of your on the edge of your seat, or screaming. And it's something that I think if the developer maps go back to that idea of, you know, each map doesn't just have to look cool. It has to do something. It has to justify its own existence, right? There's got to be – this map has to be adding something to this palette of maps that we have that none of these other maps do. Otherwise, why are we playing on it, right? And Halo 4 doesn't have that for much. I think there's a couple maps that maybe, you know, rise above the rest of the crowd a little bit. In terms of how they affect the way you play, but not much, you know. So maybe that's why I'm so head over heels for some of these custom games right now.
One thing that kind of brought me back a little bit is we're doing Halo 2 Vista nights kind of every other Tuesday. And there were several games this last week that we played that just the time limit on the server was an hour. Yeah. And there, I mean, I'm thinking back to Halo 1 and Halo 2, and all the maps nowadays are catered to a matchmaking experience where all the maps can be rotated in and they last only 12, 15 minutes. You don't have these big maps anymore that can take hours at points to play. Like I remember in college for LAN parties where we would have a coagulation capture the flag map for three captures, and it would literally take 4 hours to play one game.
Well, there goes the LAN party.
So I'm going back and looking at some of these maps. It's like these maps were big and lots of fun to play, and they took a good amount of time. But during that time window, if it was like 30, 45 minutes, you were having fun because you were playing with people. And I mean, back in Halo 1 and Halo 2 days, you were usually playing with somebody in the room, and you could kind of poke and yell at them and all this other fun stuff. And now with just how much multiplayer has shifted to the online space, I think we kind of lost the corner of Halo multiplayer that just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Definitely.
The styles of maps have really seemed to change just to be more catered towards matchmaking and to be made in such a way where because of how varied the skill is on the internet, they usually don't take too long. And I think that maybe something where the Forge maps are kind of filling a gap is because the maps don't take so long, the maps get repetitive and boring, and that's where these new fresh experiences come in to help kind of fill that void of the repetitive nature of playing the maps and having such a short time frame to play them. Because I remember playing on Containment, on Coagulation, Relic, all those kind of bigger maps, and those were some of the more fun ones to play. I didn't like Waterworks as much as some of the other ones, but those big maps were kind of really fun to play on, even though they lasted upwards of an hour or two.
Well, even in Halo Reach, couldn't a round of invasion almost last, like, what, 25 minutes or so?
Yeah, you could go close to half an hour in them, which you know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of those sorts of, you know, closer to sort of marathon matches when they happen. Granted, you know, I don't always have time for that myself, so I would always want there to be an option for a shorter game as well. Mm-hmm. But I totally see your point there about how it seems to have maybe some of that is sort of going into the design philosophy behind the maps and the game from the ground up. But it's not completely exclusive. I mean, you can have maps that are designed for a quick, short, fun match, you know, without dragging on for too long, but still have it do something unique, you know, and something that's not the same as every other map.
Right. I think another point to that may be just kind of how the environment has shifted, because in Halo 2 and Halo 3, we had interactive objects, and I know that doesn't play like a huge role in the whole kind of forging sphere, but I think it does play a significant one. Because right. it changes the flow of the map every time, and you don't get the same experience over and over again, where with some of these symmetrical, smaller maps, you get the same flows, and they're very predictable, and I think that's one of the things where it doesn't become as fun anymore.
It kind of depends on the player, though, regarding what's fun. It does. I mean, for instance, if you get into a competitive match on, let's take Sanctuary, because it's so iconic, right? If you get into a competitive match on Sanctuary, part of the fun is knowing how to play the map. If you're put up against four people who don't really know how to set up on that map, it's like, say you're playing Capture the Flag. They don't know that you have to, you know, take the other team's sniper hut, keep a guy like on pea shooter, put somebody else in ring, force a rock spawn. Like, that's fun. for the competitive people, knowing how to play the map and executing is fun. There's an excitement to doing it right and watching it work. And that's one thing that I don't get as much in the Halo 4 maps that shipped with it. Like, for a lot of those maps, I don't feel like there's a setup that needs to be executed to make the map work. So I don't want to get off on this too much. I just want to say, for some people, the predictability, the going and doing this certain formula is actually a lot of fun. It's, for some people, that's really part of the game, and they enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I think right there you actually touched on a bigger topic, because, well, that's only kind of one of those things I see as part of the game being catered towards a lot more balanced experience towards casual players. There's a lot more opportunities for people to be able to come back and not get frustrated, especially for the casual crowd. And I think that's kind of one of the things in Halo that has kind of fallen off, is where that steep learning curve anymore is being broken down to where a lot more of these casual players can come in and have a good time without being beaten up all the time. And that's kind of what happens with Ordnance. It kind of breaks game flow in terms of a competitive stance and sometimes a fun stance, and makes it to where a lot more of these casual players can come in and don't necessarily feel beaten up and bruised when they come up against players that know what they're doing. So I think that's kind of a bigger topic, but it is one that I think is kind of a cornerstone that needs to be really examined for future Halo releases. Let's touch on a couple more things from Reach and then move on to 4. One of the things that we got in Reach that I think is a lot more exercise in Halo 4, just because of the variety that they've actually implemented is the ability to change shape colors to help kind of identify where you are on parts of the maps. And this is specifically helpful for symmetrical maps on like Forge World, where it's a lot of gray and the colors help kind of differentiate. And if you look at some of the Halo 4 maps in colors, they're a lot more distinguished and a lot really help pronounce where you are on maps.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think that when you change the color on an item in 4, it's a lot more noticeable than it was in Reach. Yeah, I'd go there.
Yep, agreed.
Like, I have the AGL stream on the laptop sitting over on the wayside, and they just played, I think, Simplex. And, of course, they have those colored off, and it stands out. The colors actually stand out to where in Reach, it was hard to kind of tell where you were sometimes, because you had to really look at some of the shapes that you put out there.
Yeah, you do silly things like take a 3-story tower and flip it down and use just the base of it against the wall to give you like this little bitty outline of color. You're like, yeah, there we go. See, that's blue base.
Yeah. Yep. One of the things that's really cool that they did with Forge Island is the Coliseum wall now has this really nice bright color strip on the edge. So you can use that really well to add some visual punch and call outs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's see. One last thing from Reach that I want to pull in that's not necessarily specifically Forge related, but I think it had a big impact on the forging custom community, is the insane game type.
Amen.
And I think Pete can speak the most to this, because you made quite a few maps and games on this actually leading up to the release of Halo 4. I think it's kind of when you really hit it off in terms of the insane game type. So why don't you kind of lead us down that track a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen Forge with Pete, almost every map that I made for that show used the Halo Ball game type, which was part of the insane category or whatever. Halo Ball was awesome. It was a really versatile game type. It all came about, I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, but from my understanding of the sequence of events, there was this guy, I think his name was Bo Andres, and he made a skee ball map using Stockpile. And Bungie saw that, and then a few months later, they came out with Halo Ball. Instead of calling it skee ball, they called it Halo Ball. And then they put it in Action Sack, and it was that guy's map, but they had made a game type based around it. And if you had a golf ball, you could knock it into a goal, and you would score a point for your team. And that was... There was so much that you could do with that game type that it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I spent months loving on that game type and doing all kinds of different things with it, and I didn't even scratch the surface. I mean, just that ability to have a dynamic object like a golf ball and be able to score points by doing something with it, like knocking into a goal, was really, really awesome. And I love Halo Ball.
You've made some pretty interesting contraptions too. Like you made a full out blown tic tac toe game.
Yes.
In Halo Reach.
I remember that.
Yeah. I made tic tac toe. I made all kinds of stuff. I made a remake of Duck Hunt, the SNES classic, and you would shoot a golf ball as it soared across the sky, and you would score a point. And there's no way to do that without Halo Ball. And so it was just a really, it was, if you ask me, it was the biggest, most important thing to happen to Forge since Forge World. It was awesome.
Other interesting thing to add kind of on top of that, which is, in my mind, somewhat related, you may need to correct me on this, but is the fact that you can assign different game type markers or game specific markers to different objects. So you could have a warthog be a hill. You could have a ball be something that can be converted to a point for something once you get to a certain area. The one where you had the pretty much the invincibility. It was, and you had the vehicles running down the ramp, and you had to score the vehicles. Oh shoot! I'm probably gonna get yelled at this. It was one of the late Forge ones that came out.
Please don't say Speed Halo.
No, it wasn't Speed Halo. Love Speed Halo.
Oh man,
I absolutely love Speed Halo.
We have a Speed Halo hater in the group, I think.
Okay. It was fun for the first 5 minutes. I'll say that.
No, my friend. I won almost every single time I played that. And we played it during our matchmaking nights on Halo Reach when we were leading up to the Halo 4 launch. And I would win almost every single time. It was so much fun. I really wish that we could remake that in Halo 4, but I haven't seen one come out yet.
But, I mean, what you're talking about, like, I'm not a traditional, you know, multiplayer guy. I like the more creative aspects of Forge. I like doing things that are a little bit different. And like GM was saying, you know, or maybe it was Cruel Legacy, making an experience that isn't Halo. Yeah, you were saying it with the sumo, you know, making a new game. That's what I love. And repurposing game types is at the heart of that. And so you can do stuff with, you know, Stockpile was really useful in Halo Reach. But when you get something that is so versatile like Halo Ball, that's when people can really explore and do all kinds of crazy stuff with Forge that you wouldn't expect. Like I used Halo Ball to make a Rube Goldberg machine that had some interesting elements to it that I don't know if you guys saw. It's the Remember Reach Rube Goldberg machine that I made.
Yeah.
It's just so much stuff you could do with a game type that was designed for, you know, just a skee ball recreation. But having these versatile game types is awesome.
And I think credit has to go where it's due there. I remember watching the first Achievement Hunter, Achievement Horse episode, and by the 10th episode, could not believe the things that people were coming up with. And then, you know, when you're 30 episodes in or whatever, you know, the Forge community's creativity just went nuts for doing things that weren't Halo. Because the whole point of this is, you know, hey guys, we're gonna not play Halo, and then we're gonna televise it for all of you. And I could be wrong. Obviously, there are no stats and charts and research articles, but the absolute surge of creativity in Forge game types, you know, making games that aren't Halo, I think has to go back and be sparked by Achievement Horse. And just, I don't know. I will forever be grateful just for the amount of creativity that happened based on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool things that come out of that.
I think this is a good spot for me to jump in and say that, you know, people love to express themselves and build things. And I think there's a reason that games like Minecraft are so popular and awesome. But at the end of the day, when you've made something cool in Minecraft, what can you do with it? When you make something cool in Halo, you can have all kinds of fun because the underlying game is, to me, awesome. And so I think there's a lot of awesome stuff that can come from Forge. And playing stuff that isn't Halo, where I don't think necessarily other games have that.
Now you're getting into one of the other big things about Forge, which is just, I mean, the futility, right? For the people, for the average guy who sits down and goes to make a map, right? He might this guy might have a spatial reasoning IQ that raises his average IQ by 25 points, right? Just in that one spot. When he sits down and looks at a space, he just sees a world, and he sees the map, and does amazing things, right? But what is that? What does that average guy do? He builds it and never gets anybody to play on it, doesn't have any way to submit it, really. It just sits there, and then he goes, oh, why am I doing this? You know, why am I building things? No one's ever going to play on this.
Yeah,
that's so sad.
Yeah, that's
well, the, and then that's kind of
so
now.
True.
I think that's attributed just to. I mean, I don't mean this make this in the sound in a bad way, but I think that's kind of attributed to how easy it is for people to forge stuff, and just how kind of polluted the forged space can be with how many different maps that people could go out there and make. And it's really up to like forging communities at that point to help really filter out what's good and what's bad. And sometimes if you're not a known forger that's out there making stuff, then your stuff kind of gets lost in the noise.
Yeah. And you can say the same thing about, you know, having a YouTube channel or anything. I mean, you got to find a way to get people to see your stuff, and getting involved in a forge community is the best way to do that.
Right. One last thing that I wanted to bring up before going into Halo 4 Forge more specifically is we saw a little bit of this in Halo 3. But we definitely saw it explode in Halo 4, and I know you guys aren't quite along this same path in terms of forging, but Forge Art.
Yeah.
It's been really cool to see come out of Halo and what people have been able to do with just some of the random pieces of in Forge and make things that's like how I look at it, it's like, what objects did you even make to use to make that, and how many of them did you use, and how what, huh? I'm confused. baffled.
Absolutely, yeah. I love Forge Art. It's almost, I mean, what I use Forge for more than anything else is probably closer to Forge Art than it is to anything else, because I'm not much for building more traditional maps. I'm not very good with the custom game settings. I've tinkered with them a little bit. I've made some race tracks and that was about it. But most of what I do is creating sort of, you know, more aesthetic environments and locations and things like that. And it's awesome. It's great. I mean, I love the whole, I think I was chatting with Pete, about this once, but the whole sort of, miniatures community, like people who just go in and build miniature cities or maps or things like that.
Oh, you stole my line.
Damn it. Sorry. I mean, yes, I stole it. It's awesome. It's great. You know, it's so cool to see people being able to do this in this game, you know?
I love Forge Art, and I love little miniature cities. They're so cool. People make like cars out of guns and stuff. I love them.
Well, the interesting thing now is that modded game type in Halo 4 where you're actually running around as a mini.
You're running around as a gun. I've seen it. I'm not impressed.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's so much fun. There's actually one time where I don't think it was actually, it actually worked all right to where the gun was actually the smaller size as well. So it wasn't something that was overly just out there. But it could be, it's the first one I played. It worked really well, had a lot of fun, and you could tune down the speed and the jump height to kind of reflect the miniature stuff. And then, I mean, that technically opens up a brand new world in Halo 4 Forging where you can actually make these quote-unquote bigger landscapes. Now, granted, it doesn't change your field of vision, so you could see, in a way, miles away, but it's still pretty interesting.
Well, see, that you're missing the whole point of having a tiny city. If you're tiny in a tiny city, then it's just a normal size city, and that's boring.
Yeah, you gotta have.
Yeah, but imagine what you could do with how small it is, and how much more stuff you could throw in there just because it's a smaller size.
I prefer to think I'm a giant.
Pete, you are a giant. All right, let's be honest.
Forging giant, yes.
I don't really want to go there too much because I'm uptight.
That's just my personal
about
take on
modding.
It.
I try to avoid using any. Well, I don't try to. I avoid using any modded stuff. So I definitely see there's fun and potential there, and good for the people that do it. But it's something I personally stay away from.
That's fine. Everyone has their own kind of view on the whole modding scene.
Yeah, I respect the people that do. I mean, they have fun, and occasionally on Twitter, I'll throw them an idea. I'm like, you know, if I was modding, which I'm not, you should do this. Have fun with that.
Very interesting. But that just goes to show how creative people can be with the whole Forge environment just within Halo. And now that kind of brings us around to Halo 4, where we now have a plethora, well, not really a plethora, but we have a good variety of Forge maps to actually build off of and have these different environments to where it's not the gray-style Forge world as it was in Halo Reach. But we have the three ones that came on the disc, which is Impact, Erosion, and Ravine. And then we had the recently released Forge Island one, where I'm still surprised on how slow maps are coming out of that. I would have expected to see a lot more maps come out quickly on that one, but I know, Pete, you've been working on a few maps off of Forge Island, along with some other folks that I follow on YouTube and just throughout the community. So let's kind of venture around the Halo 4 foraging system. Now, we got quite a few different tools in the Halo 4 forge system that are kind of useful. I think one of the big ones for people is the ability to lock things in place. Can you guys attest to that?
It works.
It works.
I don't use it that much.
No, not a whole lot, really.
The whole accidental deletion thing, I just know I've been on the wrong side of that a few times.
Well, I guess, okay, here's the big thing. You give us a locking system, but then you take away minute adjustment. I don't have anything left that I need to lock. That's the problem.
There's still the rotational drift, so what does it even matter?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
My big thing is, I think, to their credit, they've made it so much more clear which item you're actually highlighting now.
The highlight is good.
That I never accidentally move the wrong piece, you know, or the lock, and it's not that there's anything bad about the lock feature, it's just that I think they came up with two different solutions for the same problem. In that now you can actually see what you're highlighting so much better. And so if you know, it's really, really rare that I would ever highlight something without noticing it now. And you know, it's a lot harder to accidentally move the wrong piece now than it used to be.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Let's see, what else? We got the duplication feature, which it's nice to have.
I use it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. Actually, I would go so far as to say that's one of my favorite implemented changes to Forge. Like, thank you.
Okay.
That is one of the things that we asked for. You gave
so
it to
us. That's the big one for most people in here, it seems like.
Yeah, and the best thing about it is that, like, if you have a kill zone and you give it a certain shape and then you duplicate it, the new one has that same shape or it has that same object label you've given it. And that saves a lot of time.
Yep.
That's good.
That whole time thing.
Yeah, no kidding. Why don't you guys throw some more out? Because I haven't really forged much in Halo 4.
Magnets.
Magnets. That's a huge one.
I have a love-hate relationship with magnets, personally.
You love them when they work, and you hate them when they don't do anything good for you?
Yeah, it's just, I think it's the coolest idea. It's great. It's just that sometimes the magnetic anchor points are not where you would expect them or want them to be. Which, you know, understandably, how could 343 and Certain Affinity possibly predict every which way we would rotate these pieces and which combinations we try to stick them together? No. But it's just that, you know, sometimes you're trying to stick a piece a certain way and the magnet just, it does more harm than good, so you just shut it off. And that's fine. I mean, you shut it off and great, but at that point you're not utilizing this what should be a cool, helpful feature, right? So I think this is getting super niche and super, you know, demanding.
Yeah, go there.
I'll go there. Like for the magnet feature to be truly useful, it would be nice to be able to edit where the magnetic anchor points are.
Ooh.
Because I think a lot of people wouldn't even run into that problem necessarily, right?
I don't know if we necessarily need editable points more than just that.
Or more of them.
More of them, because when the little forging I've done, I was surprised to see how few magnet points there were on some of these objects, like the walls and the boxes and the blocks and all those things. And then with some of the other things that didn't have magnets that I thought would have some magnets, like some of the crates and a couple other things. It seemed a little odd to me that some objects that you would think would have magnets don't have magnets, especially on maps that aren't necessarily the Force specific ones.
Yeah.
So I think on Longshore, there's actual there's some kind of plate or platform or something that you can spawn out, but they don't have any magnets on them. But you would think that if you were creating a floor, you would have magnets for those, and they're not there. So it's just some of those weird things coming up, and that you'd think for some pieces they would have more magnet points for people to really help create a little bit more dynamic play spaces if needed, and the have some of these other objects have some magnets that that don't on there that you think would.
I don't want to bash on magnets too much though, because if you're using the forge pieces like they're intended, which, and there are a lot of situations where you will, like say you're remaking Uncaged or something, you can do that so fast with magnets.
Yeah,
connecting bridge pieces. Yep. Is just nearly instantaneous. All the lines line up. There's no hiccups when you're going from one piece to another when you're in player mode. So, I mean, for what they're designed for, they work really well. And again, talking about time, they just cut down on the amount of just useless time that I spend doing menial tasks instead of being creative.
Yeah.
And that's when I use them. I think if I had to do anything with magnets, I would just make it so there was a toggle on the D-pad just to turn them on and off. Because I use them. Not all the time, but they're definitely useful for some mundane, you know, repetitive, making a floor or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
All right. Anything else that sticks out to people's minds?
Well, there's the trait zones.
Oh, yeah. Those are kind of cool. I don't think they're really used as much as people thought they would be used, though.
Yeah, I still think there's a lot of untapped potential there, personally.
Yeah, I think so.
I agree.
Onslaught uses them.
Yes, it does.
Well, and the other odd thing about it, too, is for like oddball game types, the oddball doesn't go through them. It just bounces right off.
The gravity volumes. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, trait zones, they're something you're not going to use a lot. I've got a map coming out sometime. I don't know when. That uses them to great deal. So they're definitely useful to have. I'm glad we have them. If I could do something with trait zones, I would make them a game type label instead of an object unto itself. So you could assign it to a warthog or something like that, which you can't do. Right now it's just a hill and it's, you know, stationary. If you can make those dynamic in some way, that'd be really cool.
Right.
Trait zones do something. I'm going to simultaneously hit on something that's absent from Forge and something that we're using trait zones to get past. And that's one of the things we really wanted was a lot of work done on lifts for Forge. We wanted, like, pathways. I know that would probably be a ridiculous amount of work to implement, but if you could do pathways for lifts so I can set start point, end point, and take this arc to get me there, that would be so huge. But what we can do right now is use trait zones along the way to adjust gravity so that you drop where you're supposed to drop and you don't take damage.
Right.
You go as far as you're supposed to, and you come down where you're supposed to. I saw a Guardian remake, and the only reason it worked, because you can't emulate those lifts and keep the scale right, is he's using trait zones to get the lifts to put you where you're supposed to be. So if for nothing else, I'm thankful for trait zones just to let me do lifts with precision.
Yeah, I wish we could set those endpoints too, because I've noticed the man cannons in Halo 4 are really unpredictable. Like if you walk into it from the side, you're going to go flying off to the left or something like that. I have had very little success with man cannons.
A bunch of little things that make and break Halo Forge.
But I still love it.
It's interesting. Yeah. No, Forge is a wonderful tool to have. And I mean, just from what we've seen from the custom community in Halo 4 and Halo 3, Halo Reach, it's a very powerful tool that people can use to make their own maps and their own creations, and helps keep the experience in Halo fresh, I think. I mean, we've seen how many different maps get used throughout the matchmaking system, so they're definitely being utilized. I pretty much want to open the discussion here to things that we like and dislike about Halo 4 Forge. I know we already touched on some of them, but I want to go ahead and start off this kind of roundtable-ish freeform discussion with gadgets. I think gadgets is something some people are looking for. I don't think necessarily the majority of the population is looking for gadgets, but I think that'd be kind of one of those cool things to be able to throw in a switch to a door, be able to have different pathways that open up based on maybe an objective that you're able to pick up, and have those kind of event-driven things that help kind of change map flow be integrated back into Halo, because I think that was one of the things that really helped Halo 2 and Halo 3 matchmaking was the fact that you had those different flow control mechanisms that helped change the pace of the game.
And in Reach, you had the invasion game type, which could be used to do lots of things to that effect.
And you can kind of use extraction to do that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not great. Dominion also, you can spawn in new objects, but yeah, absolutely. Buttons. We need buttons. You know, I talked about Minecraft earlier. Just look at what Minecraft does. You know, it's a great editor. For me personally, it's a kind of a sucky game once you've built something that's awesome. Yeah. But I think if they could grab, you know, the dynamic elements of that editor and bring it into Halo, it'd be awesome.
Because well, they can almost do something with like the channels, like they do with the teleporters, where you can have a switch maybe be some kind of forgeable object. Maybe you can have a standard, like one type of, or maybe a couple different types of switches that you can use in Forge. Plant those, and similar to the teleport system, you have those different channels that the switches activate, and then that might actually throw in a different cool aspect to it too, where if you activate a switch, it could open one of two doors.
Yeah, and there's it brings up a topic, I guess I'm going to talk about this.
Yeah, go for it. We're kind of in the open form area, so go
for it.
In
Halo 4, you know, if you're standing there and there's a block that's trying to spawn next to you, it won't. In Halo Reach, the blocks don't care where you are. They're going to spawn inside of you or something like that. But in Halo 4, if you're in the way, that block's not going to spawn. And I've actually found that useful in some cases. Like you can use little tricks to make buttons and things like that. I put a tutorial out a couple months ago about that. But just in general, that can be actually kind of frustrating. So I wish that was something that was optional. But yeah. Players should not prevent objects from spawning. We should have some kind of button that does that.
Well, in Halo Reach, it was funny because if something did spawn in you, and depending on how it spawned, you either just it pushed you out of the way or you died.
Yeah. I had so many good clips in my fail montages thanks to that.
Yeah. I made musical chairs in Halo Reach, and it was critical that the floor could spawn inside of players, basically, and I can't make it in Halo 4. I've tried, but it's not possible, and so that's it's a little frustrating sometimes.
Yeah,
I miss my musical chairs.
Aww. There's a lot of things in Reach that didn't really translate over to Halo 4 for better or for worse, really. And I want to see that kind of insane game type come back. The we still kind of have some of it where you could set some of the game type markers and tags to some objects, but I still think the biggest forging environment that we've had so far is Reach's forge environment, just from what you could do with Forge Island, and then on top of that, the insane game type.
You mean Forge World?
Sorry, Forge World. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the map is only half the story. It's the game types and the objects you have available to you.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Really,
it's hard to talk about one without the other. I mean,
kind of is.
Game types are so essential. I think that's why people were so ticked off when it was, you know, there's no race, there's no VIP, Flood can't have weapons. And it was like, well, don't you realize that game types are half of what we're doing here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that some of those things are taken out in terms of functionality, it just kind of takes away a vital aspect that has been the forging environment before, and kind of a quintessential part to Halo if you think about how involved forging and the custom community was into actually keeping the longevity of the game up there and alive.
Well, there's something that I think this is a sort of a bigger issue, which could go off into a whole bunch of different directions, but I think it's something that's going to take time to develop. But there's a a really certain sort of level of understanding that there needs that needs to exist between a developer and their community when it comes to bringing in these sort of really cool custom tools and niche or outlying tools that are not part of the core game, right? And what I mean by that is that you know, for the developer needs to not only put this stuff in the game, but understand, like, why is this going in the game? In what situations is it useful? How does it need to work in order to be useful? And I think that's something that Bungie developed with their community over lots and lots of time and lots of communication and lots of work. And I think 343 is still at the early days of that phase where, you know, it's like, oh, well, you're asking for more, you know, of a certain option. So here it is, but maybe they don't quite get what makes that useful. And I think we see that disconnect with, you know, a lot of the really cool stuff they added to Forge, but all the cool stuff they took out of custom games, right? Which is, it leaves Forgers in certain areas of the community sitting there going, well, so this stuff is great, but I can't use it because you took out all this other stuff, which I built my entire website off of, you know, and it's a bit of growing pains, I think. And it's something that'll take a while to sort of, you know, to get that rhythm back and that level of understanding back.
And I think it says a lot that the three Forge maps that launched with Halo 4 weren't made by 343.
Oh, yeah. Certain Affinity did them, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then when 343 steps in, we get Forge Island, which is awesome. But I think it just kind of shows that Forge kind of got the short end of the stick, and maybe it wasn't their focus. I think they've taken steps to show that they care about Forge and it'll get better. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't see. I this is pure speculation on my part. I think that the reason Forge was given to Certain Affinity is because 343 cared about it more than any of the other custom features like custom games or theater or anything like that. And I think 343 was like, if we don't give this to Certain Affinity, it just won't have time to get put into the game at all. You know, I think it was, they realized that it was an area that needed expanding and a level of dedicated work that they just didn't have time to give it. And so yes, they handed it to Certain Affinity, who, I mean, when it comes to their map making, I really like a lot of what they've done in the past. You know, I think the maps that Certain Affinity made in Halo Reach were fantastic. And but it is sort of I would say it's unfortunate that 343 wasn't able to do it themselves, given that, you know, they're the ones. They've now put themselves in this sort of middleman position, right? Where they had one developer making the thing and then the community talking to someone else instead. And it's odd. It's an odd situation.
To kind of expand on just the whole forging thing in general, just going away from customs, Machinima is another big thing for that Forge really gets down into. And Nevin, that you're well versed in that. Especially with something that's coming up very soon, which you'll be on another show for. But the Machinima community is also kind of reaping some of the benefits off of some of the features in Forge, and now some of the stuff that's been taken away. You want to touch on the Machinima aspect of forging?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I would say, like, for example, I got into making Machinima in Halo Reach. And one of the things that really attracted me to it was the environment of Forge World and everything that was possible with Forge World, as far as using it as, like, if you think of it like as a filmmaker looking for a location to shoot on, right? And combining Forge with Forge World and all the different environments and types of looks that you can achieve, and it was cool, it was great, you know, there were definitely a lot of hurdles to overcome and making everything work the way you want it to. But at the end of the day, you could do it quite seamlessly. And, you know, I haven't done much Machinima in Halo 4 yet. I've done a few, shorts, for, you know, some of the map packs that have come out recently. I've done little sort of, you know, funny little 2 or 3 minute machinima shorts to promote the new maps, basically. And, you know, making machinima in Halo 4 so far for me is a real nightmare. And we have some tools that are great. You know, the green screen that was just added in Forge Island is awesome, and that is going to lead to some really, really cool stuff. I mean, you've already seen people playing with it in fun ways, but there's lots of more. Like, I can't wait to see what people do with it in the long run, right? But again, this is one of those cases where, you know, I'm looking at it going, well, this is awesome. I've got this green screen piece, which is fantastic, but Halo 4 is still not useful to me from a machinima point of view because of all the other stuff that gets in the way. And so it's a really cool step. And it's I think it's just going to lead to people, you know, like, I can't do a season of playtime in Halo 4. I've done a whole bunch of test stuff, really, because I wanted to. I mean, I waited for Halo 4 to come out before I started real production on my show, because I wanted to use it. I saw all the things with the player trade zones and all the cool new Forge pieces and tools. I'm like, this is gonna be great. And then, you know, you get in there and I just, you know, you take a few steps with your character and his gun pops back up every time he walks, and something as simple as that right there just blew it for me. So, okay, back to the drawing board. You know, it's going to take me sort of looking at it and coming up with a new type of machinima to work around Halo 4's limitations in that way. But there are some really great tools in there, and the green screen, I think, is number one among them. Like, I really think that that's gonna be a really useful tool in the long run.
And I'm sure one of the limitations you probably don't like is having all the armor and stuff locked.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nightmare. That's an absolute nightmare. And
well, it was technically all locked in Reach.
It was, and it was a nightmare then too. there's no way around that. It's it was funny. I made way back a couple of years ago when Playtime Season 2 came out, I made a little 5-part how to make machinima guide that got published on Halo Waypoint, and there were just written articles with screenshots and little videos and things like that. And one of the parts of this guide, like half of the article, was talking about juggling armor sets, right? And designing characters around, you know, you don't want to necessarily use expensive pieces for designing your characters, because, you know, you have to have guest profiles that are going to be able to use them and all this stuff. And I got a lot of comments from people going, like, that never even occurred to me, you know, watching machinima, like the nightmare it must be to go through all that stuff. But I would love for there to be some sort of machinima mode where all that stuff just gets unlocked. I mean, that would be a dream come true. But yeah, I mean,
well, they did that with the weapons on offline mode, but the armor sets, yeah, that's still something that's the whole unlock system, I think, is kind of a point of contention in the community where a lot of people really don't like to see it, because it kind of reminds them of Call of Duty, and just having that whole progression system is not that appealing from at least a couple of people that I've talked to.
Yeah.
Someone brought up in the chat not having elites anymore. Is that something that kind of affects you from,
oh yeah,
for you, since your Playtime series has elites in it, but.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that was when I found that out, I was like, well, yeah, so much for that show, at least. I mean, I those characters are just too big a part of that show for me to just ditch it. So, at a certain point, it's sort of like, well, boohoo, you know, come up with something else. And I've seen some really cool, there's a show, I think it's called the Halo 4 show, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of the guy who makes it now, but, he's come up with a really cool system where what he does is because moving the characters around in Halo 4 looks so clunky, and because the weapon lowering thing doesn't really work quite right, and the head movement doesn't look as good as it did in previous games, he sort of has abandoned trying to do sort of long form cinematic style storytelling. And he's done this sort of almost little mini sketch comedy variety show where, you know, each episode is like, you know, here's a 30-second scene where something funny happens, and then here's a completely unrelated 2-minute scene where something funny happens, and he's doing really, really great stuff with it. And so there's totally room for great machinima within Halo 4. It's just we can't do the things that we're used to doing, and I think that's a jump that you know throws people a bit when Forging goes into in the same ballpark. When you're used to, when you've built a certain technique or tool set that you're used to relying on, and you go into this new game expecting to have new cool stuff to use, but you don't think that the old stuff is suddenly going to vanish, right? It doesn't occur to you. And so you just gotta sort of start from the drawing board all over again.
Well, it's interesting because there's some of these different features in Halo that have been there for a while that are now taken out. And one of those things is we've been able to play as elites since Halo 2. We have the race game type in Halo 1, Halo 3, and Halo Reach.
Yeah.
Or not Halo 3, Halo Reach. We had Halo 1 and Halo Reach where we had the racing game types, and everyone was happy to see it back in Reach. It's kind of funny that they took it out in Halo 4. Same thing with being able to be played as elites.
Sure, yeah.
It just seems like some of those things that are not necessarily big ticket items, but things that get overlooked that kind of segregate different parts of the community out.
There's some confusing omissions from Halo 4. Like, there's no one flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's strange. No one flag, no assault now. There seems to be some things in Halo that are now kind of missing that seem quintessential parts of the sandbox. And it's kind of up to 343 now with the feedback that they've gotten from the community to bring those things back in or have them prepared for Halo 5.
Yeah. Right.
It's,
yeah.
It's something I would love to know what's really required to make these game types possible before I like rag on 343 for not making them. Because yeah, right. I'm sure there's a reason. I'm sure they care about the community and they hear this feedback. I don't understand what's going on exactly, but it'd be nice to have them.
Well, I think it kind of goes back to the whole CSR thing where We have CSR now, but there's just the technical limitation that with how they have Halo 4 coded, it just can't be put in the game.
I thought it was a conscious decision. I thought it was we don't want players boosting. Yeah.
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 I thought it was a technical limitation.
Maybe it's both, or I have no idea. But I thought I've seen I could be getting this totally wrong, but I thought it was seeing them post on Twitter saying, you know, it's not visible in game because we don't want people chasing it and boosting it. We want the people who care about it to be able to check and see. But I don't know. I mean, that's one of those things that you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because I was certainly the first person to complain about the ranks in previous games being meaningless because people boosted so often that you never knew if the ranks you were looking at were accurate anyway. So,
yeah. Although they said that with how the ranks are done right now, you couldn't boost because if you tried to, the higher level that's with you is actually going to be brought down.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't really understand. I don't understand the current ranking system because from what I recall, after two games of Action Sack, I was already a rank 26. In the Action Sack playlist? Yeah. The algorithm for the current ranking system is complete whack. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, unless in Action Sack they're just not enforcing like a true skill matching because they're not worried about it since the game types are weird. And then in that case, you might get matched up against like, say you get matched up against somebody who's already like a 45 and then you beat them. That probably does ridiculous things for a 1 to beat a 45 or something.
Yeah, your rank will go through the roof, yeah.
I don't know if Action's actually the best place to get those numbers, get that experience. You might want to see what happens when you start boosting your CSR in the other playlists, like the more standard ones.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to a buddy of mine on Facebook, and he said after 7 games on another playlist, he was up quite high. And I would assume that if you're playing a game where people are like, since the ranking list just came out this last week, I would assume that if for everyone starting out, you wouldn't really be jumping more than maybe 2 ranks per match.
Yeah, I suppose.
And how can someone like, I think I only played two. I mean, I guess I could have played more. I don't exactly recall what my stats were, but my friend that I was talking with on Facebook, he said he played 7 games on one playlist and he was at a 28 after those 7 games. Mm. It's like, that doesn't quite make sense. Yeah. Wow. So it doesn't really seem like the current ranking system is quite the way it needs to be. So, I mean, good thing they can actually change the ranking algorithm and reset ranks later down the line.
Yeah, I don't know. My question is, does it matter? Like, if I can't see it in game, I mean, Nevin had said, you know, so it's only for the people who care about it. And I understand that, but how many more people will care about it if they can see it? So it kind of cuts both ways. Like, you may not care about it if you have to go through the inconvenience of looking it up from another source. But if it's always right there and you know that every time you go in a lobby, other people see it, you're going to start to care about it.
Well, the point of the whole ranking,
you're going to want it to be good.
The point of the whole ranking system was to see that how you compare it up to somebody immediately before and after a game.
Yeah.
And you can't really do that if you have to go outside the game, wait a little while, because at that point you're going to kind of forget.
Yeah,
I see it as a little counterintuitive. I mean, I understand what you're saying where, yeah, the people that really care about it are going to go look for it on Waypoint. I get that, but it just seems, from the standpoint of just the mindset of people going, like, the reason why it's there is to get that immediate analysis of how you match up against someone else.
Yeah, and it provides an experience, too. Like, I remember watching a friend play doubles in Halo 3, right? And there's this guy who's obviously boosting somebody or just getting weirdly matched up randomly. So there's my friend, and he's around a 30 in doubles, right? And he gets matched with a partner who's also about a 30. And then the guys they're going up against is a 50, straight up general, and this guy who's a staff captain, which I think was down around, I think it was 26 or something. So my friend Zach is talking to his teammate. He's like, oh, okay, here's the plan. Kill the staff captain. Yeah. So for the rest of the game, every time they see the general, both guys turn around and completely run away, and they try to isolate the staff captain and kill him. They win the match, though. So to this day, me and Zach joke about, you know, okay, here's the plan. Kill the staff captain, right? That can't happen now. I don't know who the staff captain is.
Yeah.
I guess that's fair. Yeah. We kind of deviated from Forge a little bit.
Sure.
Surprise, surprise.
it's spectacular. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Any other comments on stuff missing from Halo 4 Forge? Anything that's there that you guys really like?
Well, I mean, generally, I like what they've done with Forge Island. I think that
that's very plain.
It is. Oh, and
that's the point.
Yeah, that's the thing. It is the point, right? And I mean, you know, like completely selfishly speaking, like for my purposes, I have no desire to go in and use it the way I used Forge World and Halo Reach. But I've seen what others are already doing with Forge Island and some of the games that I've played on Forge Island custom maps. And I'm like, okay, this is great. It's a great addition to the game. And I think it is to a certain degree a lot of fan service of, hey, you know, here you guys wanted huge space. Here you go. You wanted a ridiculously high ceiling. Here you go. You want flat terrain. Here you go. You know, and so I think all of that is cool and nice to have. So
Someone in the chat box said trees.
Trees are, yeah.
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 We had those in Reach. On Ridgeline, and then they brought them back here in Forge Island.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, funny you mentioned Ridgeline, because that's a map that I still feel like I haven't explored enough in Forging, and I want to go back and do some more work on that, because I think that was a beautiful map with lots of Forge potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
To go farther with the natural pieces, I mean, trees. I was super excited about trees because I saw all of, you know, there are going to be trees. Oh, cool. But then when there were rock pieces that were distinctly block-shaped, I got really excited.
Oh, yeah.
Look, rocks with flat surfaces that I can use as building blocks. Please give me an entire palette. I will go nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how many people have flipped a tin cup upside down to get some texture differentiation in their map because they want some grass. I mean, you know, having a flat rock or a flat grass block or just something to add some landmarks and visual variety is nice. Because one thing that killed me when I was trying to make maps on Impact is you're trying to make a room, the walls and the floor, you make them out of the same blocks. There's people were turning bridges upside down just to get a darker texture. And
yeah,
you know, we need some variation there. Yeah. So I'm definitely happy with the new pieces they add for Forge Island. I will say Forge Island, like you were saying, Crew Legacy, it's not for everyone. I think Halo 5 needs a Forge World and a Forge Island. I don't think either is sufficient on its own.
Agreed.
Yeah, there definitely are some challenges that something like a Forge World brings. Something Pete and I have talked about before, back when he was on the modcast, about how there's just like technical stability kind of goes out the window in certain cases, right? You can put all this work into building a Forge map and you get to the end and then you realize that as you run past this one window, the game slows to a chug because of the draw distance. It's trying to render the waterfall way off in the distance. And you're like, oh, I should have built this facing the other way, you know? And so there's some problems there for sure. But, I think, and this is just a personal, I mean, my earliest memories of Halo. I mean, how many people played through the first level of Halo CE and thought that was cool? But then the second level, when you're standing at the edge of that cliff and you're looking at the big valley and you get to drive the Warthog over all the hills and everything, like, to me, Halo is all about that blend of nice natural terrain and these beautiful alien structures. And we that's what Forge World spoke to me, is being able to achieve that. And we don't quite have that so much in Halo 4. I mean, there's the I'm drawing a blank on the name of the shipping forge map it's on a natural terrain with a big Forerunner structure built right into it.
Ravine?
Yeah, that was it, Ravine. I mean, that's sort of going for the same vibe, but it's, I find, too small to be useful in most cases for the type of stuff we're used to working on. So,
right.
I think that might have been a mistake that they made going with three. I like that there are three different Forge environments. I mean, at least it gives me different textures and looks to play with, right? But sometimes I go into one and I'm like, man, I really wish that I had this space, you know, in Erosion. I'd like to work with the Erosion palette, but I need this space that I have, like, just floating in the air or something, you know, on Impact. Or I don't know. I would love if I had Forge World with three different palettes, essentially. Give me the same space to work with different palettes, because it's going to lead to disappointment if you don't give it to me.
So, yeah.
I don't know. That's how I feel sometimes, though.
I think I'm kind of out of questions.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to talk about? In terms for just Forge in general? I mean, we've covered quite a bit, so I think we've covered most of the bases. Is there anything particular that you would want to see 343 add into Forge for Halo 5? Is there any kind of, like, one big feature, if you can think of one, that you would say is kind of a prerequisite for Halo 5 Forge?
AI.
AI.
Ooh.
That's interesting.
Well, I mean, doesn't
okay, he... Pete, what would you do with AI? Tell us.
Okay. There's two ways to do this. There's like my fantasy, which is like, just let us make maps like firefight maps, you know, and let us place actual enemies, you know, because then you can make like a single player map or something like that. So that's the far out dream. And then there's the more like reality check idea, which is just give us like maybe a turret or a stationary, you know, enemy object that we can configure to fire at you and shoot weapons and stuff like that. And I think there's a lot of uses. You could make like an obstacle course or a training map, or
you can make like a D-Day map kind of too.
Yeah, I mean, you could do all kinds of stuff with some kind of AI, you know. And we've got turrets in Halo 4, but they kind of suck. They're not very dangerous. They have a really short range. You got to, you know, activate them before they function. Some kind of AI would make me very happy. If I had to pick one thing, that would be it.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Nevin, what about you?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean,
I think for me personally, it's the Switches.
Yeah, yeah, Switches would be very, very cool. I'm just thinking back to I mean, this might fall under the category of Switches too, or just movable objects. But when I think about, you know, all I used to spend when I was building racetracks, it would take me almost as long to build some kind of starting gate mechanism as it would take me to build the rest of the track. So you know, again, things that can be, you know, like doors that can be programmed to just open at a certain time, or pieces like I would love to be able to you know, easily and predictably build just a moving platform, you know, a moving conveyor belt, and you know, like a platform just sort of moving from one base to the next and back again, like the gondolas in the campaign or something like that. Like those sorts of that sort of control would be fantastic.
Okay, Greg, what about you?
Well, I think what y'all are talking about are events. To be able to put in an event, you know, if X, do Y.
Yeah.
You know, if I step here, move this platform. If I shoot that, then open this door. Or that'd be huge for things like if Invasion came back and there were like two ways to go about getting to the objective. It was like you could take the direct approach if you thought you could really pull it off, or to make it easier, there's like an optional objective and you could go do this event. And that's going to like open up a second pathway, drop a bridge, do something, you know. So events would be huge. But you asked what's the one thing that has to be in Halo 5 or I'm not going to be happy. Group select. Group select has to be in there. I've got to be able to group pieces and rotate them all at once, move them all at once. Like now,
that would be cool.
Sometimes I build a level and I look out the window and there's screen lag. If there's group select, grab the whole level, move it somewhere else.
Thank you so much for reminding me of another thing I would love is the ability to duplicate a creation and move it into another map file. So because there have been times,
like a template.
Yeah, because you know, if I'm making you know, and this is something that you run into in Machinima a lot, like I'm making a set for a certain location and then I need to make another version of that location where there's, you know, maybe another new structure somewhere or some similar pieces, but other stuff that's changed rather than, you know, it would just be great to be able to, you know, build a tower that I like and then copy and paste that tower as many times as I wanted within the Forge budget, you know, something like that would be fantastic.
So that would be group select plus import export.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. Yeah.
And I think I'm something like there. Group select would be a natural evolution of locking. I think it'd be easy to, you know, convert locking into something like that. Maybe all the locked objects rotate together or duplicate together or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
It would be interesting. I have a couple more ideas, but it would be interesting to see if 343 would be willing to have something like a computer mapping kit where maybe you could go buy this kit for $300 and then you can basically import the maps and basically forge on your computer like you would a 3D program. Similar to what they've kind of did with Halo 2 Vista and with the custom edition for Halo 1.
Right.
Yeah. That would be cool.
I think some of the charm of Forge is the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
Right, but then have like an advanced forging playground where people can go in and actually make those fine adjustments and really, I mean, it just gives you another level of control, I think, in my opinion. But that's just me. Another thing, I guess, because no one else is saying anything. Another thing I would like to see, and I want to get your guys' take on this, because I've been telling this for a while, and I kind of get mixed reactions, but the ability to change, like, time of day, weather.
Oh, God, yeah.
All that kind of stuff. I would like to see that in Forge.
Dude, that would save me so much editing time.
I was gonna say, can you imagine that for Machinima?
Man, I'm creating a snowstorm right now, and it's taking me for fucking ever. Like, it would be so nice to be able to do that stuff in game.
That green screen. Probably
I think
that
would.
That.
I think the whole weather thing would add so much dynamic to some of these game types where you could have, or these maps where. You'd have one where it's clear as day, but then when you change it to like dusk and it's like drizzling, that gives just a whole nother feel to the map.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think,
and we've seen what they've done with dynamic lighting, and that's something that we forgot to mention about Halo 4 is the dynamic lighting in Forge.
Yeah. In terms of giving us, you know, some visual options, I think it'd be cool if the whole concept of these color stripes on objects, it'd be nice if you could just tint an object, the entire object, make it, you know, tint slightly red or slightly green or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be big, especially for just recognition, instant awareness.
Okay, I think that wraps this up then. Any last remarks before we officially close this out for the night?
No, just thanks for having me on. I mean, always a pleasure to be here. So.
Yeah, ditto.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quack, quack.
Quack, quack. All right. So thank you guys, you three, for being on. If for you guys listening, you probably noticed that Brent dropped out very early on, that he hasn't been talking at all, but that's because he had a family emergency that came up, so he had to go take care of that. So, Brent, we're rooting for you wherever you're doing out there. So, again, to you three, thank you very much for coming on the show. I know a couple of you have some website and social networks to tout. Pete, let's start with you. Where do you reside, and where do you live on the internet?
PeteTheDuck.com.
Quack.
Quack.
If you could get PeteTheDuck.quack, that would...
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Nevin, no, what about
you? Yeah, if you go to PeteTheDuck.com, you can get to my YouTube and my Twitter and stuff like that.
Awesome. And his file share, of course, because that's... Yeah, you want to check that out.
Definitely. It's a gold mine.
Really is. Yeah. Nevin, what about you? Where do you live on the internet?
Sure. So I've got a couple sites. I've got cruellegacyproductions.com, which is where I put all my stuff, like any videos or articles I write, or when I get back around to making Forge creations on a regular basis, all that stuff goes there. And then I have a site dedicated to my Machinima series, which is called playtimeshow.com. So yeah, you can find me there too.
Awesome. And Greg, what about you?
Man, there was a time, but no, not these days.
Well, you have a Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter if you want to. It's just I the GM, but God, life got so busy, man. I don't know. No, you know what? Just hit my gamer tag. It's Damah, D-A-M-A-H. I love to meet people, play all kinds of games. I'll play anything. I can sit down for a Minecraft session, or we can go play hardcore. We'll go get the Throwdown playlist, and I can hold my own. Like, I'm serious. I love meeting people. Just come on.
Awesome. All right, that wraps up the show for tonight, guys. Remember, you can check us out on podtaggler.com, and there you can submit us any questions using the big green button, or you can send them to us directly, sending us an email to submissions@podtaggler.com, or calling in via voicemail at 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256, and leave any kind of Halo-related messages. When you're corresponding with us, you can leave anything that's Halo-related, whether it be a fun custom map that you've created in Forge, any specific map game type combination that you've come up with, any kind of Halo story or funny thing that's happened to you during matchmaking, anything that's Halo related, feel free to send it our way via email or via voicemail. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and all the other social network goodness. And if you aren't already following us on Twitch, do so, and then you can be notified when we go live on our podcast, whenever we do podcasts that are not during the normal Thursday time frame like this one. So you can just go over to Twitch. If you don't have an account, create one, then follow us to be notified whenever we go live. Make sure you also check out our game nights. On Mondays, we have Monday Night Matchmaking. On Wednesdays, we have Wacky Wednesdays, which is our customs night. And on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month until Halo 2 Vista kicks the can, we play that. And then each one of those game nights are at 8:30 p.m. Our regular recording nights for the podcast are on Thursdays, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time as well. And make sure you check us out on Thursday, because we'll be having Cruel Legacy back in the hot seat to talk about his upcoming Season 4 of Playtime Show. So that's going to be something you guys do not want to miss. That, of course, premieres on April 22nd on Halo Waypoint and on his website and YouTube. So we will be definitely covering that on Thursday as well. Also, we provide this podcast free of service to everyone, but we do pay for the website and the podcast and all the publishing stuff out of our own pockets. So if you have the kind heart, we would be very happy if you would send a donation our way. And there's a donation button on our homepage. So anything that you can do to help us with hosting bills and other things that we go out and give as a service to you guys would be greatly appreciated. For those listening on the stream tonight, you may have noticed you probably did not encounter any ads tonight, and that's because we recently used a donation that we received, I believe, 3 weeks ago to get Twitch Turbo for our Twitch channel. So you can thank a special someone who donated that still hasn't given me the authority release's name yet. So we thank him for his donation, and it's being put to good use for Twitch Turbo right now. With that said, thank you again to Pete the Duck, Cruel Legacy, and I, the GM, for coming on our show. And we will see you guys on Thursday. Peace.